as Howie Mandel Does Stuff. I'm Howie Mandel. This is my daughter,
Jacqueline Schultz. Hey, what's up? How are you?
And coming in saying hello to Lou right now is, I believe, the king of comedy.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jay Leno.
Yeah.
Jay, first of all, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks. Looks like we're shooting porn in here. Yeah.
Well, it's Van Nuys.
Yeah.
And wasn't this a porn studio?
I don't think it was, but I think we were porn adjacent.
Porn adjacent, yeah.
Well, yes.
We're in Van Nuys, so that would be it.
Yes, that's it. You know what that, you know, actually, I'm going to point out chairs before you start. So that booth right there in the corner is the original center booth from Caesar's Palace. How many times did you play in front of that?
Boy, probably, yeah, a lot, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's where it is?
Yeah. Yeah. And this is the first time we've changed the chairs here,
yeah.
But I do have the front row seats from the Tonight Show.
Oh, is
from
that right?
Burbank in the other room.
Well, it's more than I got, but yeah, yeah.
And I have Johnny's last cue cards.
Oh, okay.
I took from underneath the seats. So, Jay, you know, you don't need an introduction, though I already did.
Sure.
But first of all, I got to tell you, and I think I've told you personally what you mean to me. You mean so much more to me than just...
Well, we've been friends a long time.
40 some odd years.
I know. I remember when you got off the plane. Remember we gave you a ride to the Ice House?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
So
yeah.
He's the guy that picked me up. I met him originally at Yuck Yucks in Toronto. Mm-hmm.
In fact, it was small. It was just Yucks. It wasn't until later
it expanded and
became, of course, Yuck Yucks. But it was originally just Yucks when it opened. And then we made some money. Let's put some more seats in. And I know they hope to be
yuck,
yeah.
But you've always been a fascination to me, more than just a friend. And let me tell you why. Because when I first came here was in the midst or the beginning of the Comedy Store's strike.
I guess that's right, yeah.
So for those that don't know, the Comedy Store was owned by a young lady at the time, Mitzi Shore,
right,
who got it in a divorce from her husband.
Right.
Sammy Shore.
And it used to be Ciro's nightclub.
Right.
Well, if you ever look at movies from the 50s, they'll pull up in front of Ciro's, and that was sort of the New York-style nightclub.
Supper club?
Yeah,
it was like a supper club.
Yeah,
And you'd see, like, orchestras there, and I think that's even where Lucy did her rehearsals, right? I know
Tony Bennett and all those kind of people played it. It was a legit room.
So she...
It was like the Copa, almost.
It was like the Copa West.
Yeah.
And then she got the room in a divorce.
Right.
And in the divorce, Sammy had built this club so that him and his friends, he was the opening act for Elvis Presley.
Right.
And he built it so that his friends could come and do comedy.
Right.
And then in the divorce, he said his friends should not show up.
Right.
And then she ended up recruiting like young people who just wanted stage time for free.
Right? Yeah, that was it.
And then the improv opened up out here.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened, like people said that they wanted, because the place was packed around the corner, people decided that they needed to get paid because she was making so much money?
Well, what it was, you know, it's one of those things where they opened, let me shut off my phone.
Look how busy Jay is. Jay. Who's calling?
Take it, Philip.
Oh, Philip, I'm just shooting. I'm filming a podcast. I'll call you. Call you back in a few minutes. Bye. Call back a little bit.
It was Philip. You were reading his phone.
I was reading his watch.
Oh,
Philip.
This is my daughter.
I know.
I'm a detective.
I put that on.
Philip called you.
You know, it was interesting. She had the Comedy Store where we all worked. Mitzi had a habit of sort of. Well, I think she did it to be helpful, but it got to the point where she would tell people how to do their act.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Like Jack Grayman was a very funny comedian, and I remember she said, "You're going to be Jackie Bananas from now on." Do you remember this?
No, I don't.
Well, and he'd wear a yellow jacket, and she wanted to perform that way. And
she told liked Jack Grayman to be Jackie Bananas?
Yeah, Jackie Bananas.
Is that a true story?
Yeah, that's true, yeah. But, I mean, she didn't like people who were, quote, fully formed. Like when Seinfeld came in, he was a comedian. He'd been working in the New York clubs. And he didn't really work, though, because Mitzi wanted people she could mold and that type
of thing. He didn't get a lot of spots.
No, he didn't get a lot of spots. And anyway, so there was the Comedy Store, and then the Comedy Store San Diego, then the Comedy Store West in Westwood. And then the main room opened up. And it got to the point where people were buying tickets for, oh, this is, you know, almost 50 years ago, $25,
right,
$50, whatever it was, a ticket. And she was making a couple hundred grand a week.
Really?
And the comics said, hey, can we get cab fare or something? And Mitzi was so insulted because she looked at the club as a college, a place where you learn to be a comedian.
Well, so many people at that time, you know, Freddie Prinze got seen there by The Tonight Show and ended up getting his sitcom, right?
Right, right,
and
right.
Jimmy Walker.
Well, actually, Freddie got seen on the Tonight Show. He was on with Carson.
Right, but didn't he get The Tonight Show from being seen? Because I used to see Johnny always say, we saw this young kid at the Comedy Store.
Right, I'm not sure it was Comedy Store or whether it was New York. It might have been New York. But that's, again, those show business stories kind of thing. But the deal was, Mitzi was very insulted by the fact that people wanted cab fare, or at least to get to the club, you know?
Right.
And I don't think she did it for selfish reasons. I think she just was hurt by this, you know? I mean, this is the standard thing, is what usually happens in life, you know. You grow up to go into the father's business, and then you become, you want to be as good as the father, or you're better than the father, you know, and then an infighting starts. So I like Mitzi. I didn't think Mitzi was bad. It was just the idea. It was like, Mitzi, you know, we come across town. We're coming in. The club is sold out. You've got names of people on the board. You can't throw $25 a comic just to do a set. No, nobody should get anything done. So this turned into a huge fight, and the comics went on strike, and it got pretty ugly, you know, people taking sides. And Mitzi had a lot of comics that were dependent on her. They lived in her house for free, or the apartment that she had for free, and they only worked the club. And to this day, a lot of them still only work the club.
Well, that was a thing that I noticed about you. When I came, there were teams. You know, there were the improv, the people that worked the improv, and there were people that worked the Comedy Store, and they didn't work both. You're probably the only person that I know personally that was allowed to. You'd pull up in your motorcycle, you'd do your set, you'd get on your bike, go do the improv. There was no...
Yeah, I mean, I went to the work, and then I went home. I wasn't hanging out. I wasn't...
But the fact that she would book you and Bud would book you, you didn't have... They were just thrilled to have you on
stage. Well, I was lucky to be able to have a foot in both camps. And I tried not to play one against the other. But, and of course, once Bud found out that Mitzi wasn't paying, well, then he decided to pay everybody.
Right.
You know, and be magnanimous, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, all right, so now you have one club paying and one not. So why work the club that's not paying? So then it got ugly. I mean, I didn't go back for 30 years.
Oh, you didn't. You were out of the Comedy Store for 30?
Well, I left because the Comedy Store just got crazy with the cocaine and the drugs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I remember I was in the back one day, and Sam came in, Kennison, and he had a gun and people doing coke on the table. And I said, you know, I'm a comedian. I don't want to get, when this place gets busted, I don't want to get dragged downtown.
And you'd already been in that kind of world, right? Weren't you working like the...
mob club. But I always... I just didn't want to be rounded up. I mean, to me, it ruined the Comedy Store. It became a place for, you know, just sleazy women and creepy guys. And
did you work both clubs?
Not really. They didn't like me at the improv. Mitzi kind of embraced me.
Well, you worked the Ice House, too.
I worked the Ice House, but the teams seemed to be the improv and the Comedy Store.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, I just stopped going to the Comedy Store because... I didn't want to be there the day. I sooner or later, when people are openly doing cocaine, cops are going to show up. And I'm not a cocaine guy. I don't drink. I just want to be a comedian.
You don't even eat vegetables.
I don't even eat vegetables. That's correct.
It is true.
1962 is my last vegetable.
That is true. He doesn't eat. He's been eating like burgers and pizza.
I haven't had a vegetable.
Is that true? Is that an exaggeration?
No, that is true.
Really? And so is that, have you written a diet book?
Well, I should write a diet
book. You should.
Fried food groups, burgers, hot dogs, hamburgers, pizza, pasta.
Can I tell you, you eat the same foods as my five-year-old?
Well, there you go.
You're exactly the same as my five-year-old.
There you go. Yeah. Well, there you go. And he's going to grow up to be a strong, healthy child.
Yeah.
But here's what I always thought, and I wanted, and this is why I wanted you on the podcast.
I like how we get off on a tangent.
Tangents are my life. Yeah, but you've always fascinated me, and this is what I find fascinating about you. So you were, I did look up to you. I looked up to you because I thought, how is this guy, you'd show up on stage and kill, and you were an amazing monologist, even before, you know, I think the world knew you. You know, every comic in the room would sing your praises, you know that. And when you were playing all the clubs. And even when Letterman started doing his show, you were the highlight of his show coming on. Well, you'd come on like monthly, right?
Oh, yeah. That was you know, that's probably one of the favorite times of my career.
And you talk about the TV Guide and the...
Yeah, because, you know, Letterman was a great wordsmith. He had the ability to just put unusual... You know, he would say beverage instead of a drink, you know. He used kind of like the way Norm MacDonald did, you know. But he didn't have a lot of stage presence. I mean, he would hang his head down, look at the ground, kind of mumble as he talked.
Right.
But what he said was funny, so he got good laughs, you know. And I remember I walked up to him once. I said, man, I love how you string phrases together. You great wordsmith, blah, blah. And he goes, well, how can you be so? Because I was like you. I didn't have any stage fright. I just go on and be loud and make noise, you know. And he said, how can you do that way? You know. So that's where our opposite styles. And it worked. Like when I would go on the Letterman show, I knew Letterman got nervous before I went on. So I would always go around the corner and get like an enormous meatball sandwich, you know. And I would stand by the makeup. And when Dave came down the hall, as soon as he came around the corner, oh, Dave, try this. He goes, how can you eat that crap before you get, you're going on in 5 minutes. Dave, this meatball, stop, just get rid of that thing, you know. And it would just drive him nuts, you know. And then I would just bring the sandwich on with me, you know, and then force it in his face. And, you know, and he obviously went along with it. And it was great fun. It was fun because it was the first time in my life I could be funny on the way to being funny. You know, when you did the Tonight Show, you did your joke, and then your punchline got the
But laugh. I also thought that your friendship also was...
Played part too. But it was also the first show where I didn't defer to the age of... You know, I grew up in New England, you grew up in Canada. We didn't call our parents by the first names, you know what
right.
I mean? So when I would do Johnny, you'd say, Jay, call me Johnny. And thank you, Mr. Carson. You know, it's just, you know, he was an icon. He was 20-something years older. I couldn't tease him the way I could. I could go on Letterman and go, hey, Dave, nice tie, Letterman. Where'd you get that? You know.
Right.
You couldn't do that to Johnny.
It was like the first time you were working with a peer.
That's right. Yeah, good way to put it. Yeah. So that's why.
See, I'm a wordsmith.
Wordsmith. That's right. That's why that was one of my favorite times in my career.
So I used to watch that, and I loved that. And then you, and deservedly so, I believe that you got the Tonight Show, deservedly. This is what fascinates me about you, because I always felt like, listen, and I'm using the word, but I do. I love you because you have been a good friend. You've always been supportive. You're a good person. I feel that you don't defend yourself.
You shouldn't have to defend yourself. You know, my thing is...
But you don't.
Don't believe in yourself. Make other people believe in you.
No. But that noise is louder than it should be. And the first one that really bothered me is we are in this business.
Right.
And we're in this business. You, and this is what I loved about the whole time you were doing the Tonight Show. I never saw anybody, and still to this day, I don't know anybody that enjoys their work more than you and has more of a passion for stand-up comedy,
right,
for showing up to work, for doing the work, for staying up till 3 o'clock in the morning to write a monologue, to have your friends over, to have the you are the king of following a passion and just staying and being open about what that is.
All right, I'll buy that.
Okay, so here's the thing. So if somebody says, we're going to give you the Tonight Show, because you deserve it.
Right.
I didn't understand the late night wars. I didn't understand.
Well, yeah.
Let me finish my sentence. I did not understand Letterman saying that as a friend, you did something wrong. You did nothing wrong. I would never got a part in a movie where I said, Lou is sitting here and going, oh, thank you for the lead. Thank you for giving me St. Elsewhere. I'm really good friends with Lou. Lou wants to act. He wants to do a series. Give it to Lou. Like, why would you do that? I get Letterman being upset with NBC, maybe because he has a contract with NBC and he maybe felt like he, because he's already
there. Well, there were two problems with that. A, Dave had a hugely successful show at 12:30. I had been guest hosting the Tonight Show for 5 years.
Right.
There was an incident that happened way back in the, when Letterman was guest hosting Carson and getting huge ratings and all that. One of the NBC suits said, oh, Dave, my kid's coming in from college with his girlfriend. Get him a couple of tickets for the show tonight. And Dave said, no suits and no relatives of suits. I don't want anybody, any plans from the audience. And the executive said, I'm the whatever it is here at NBC. I want my son. No. And I remember the guy telling me that story 20 years later saying, I wasn't going to put up with 20 years of that, you know? And, but it had more to do with the fact Dave, if Dave had gotten the Tonight Show, they would have had to come up with another show for 12:30.
Right.
So they had a hugely successful show at 12:30. I was filling in for Johnny at 11:30, and the ratings were holding and doing well. And that's the main reason they decided to stay. I mean, I always hear from people how Dave had the show and I came in one day and demanded it and took it away. Well, no, he can't demand it. It doesn't work.
But that's my point. My point is you didn't take a show. You deservedly got a show. I understand him feeling disappointed.
Yeah.
I understand that. And you just told us a story that we had never heard before. But I also know, just as a human being, you know, you cross somebody who's in a position to right. kind of spread and tell that story and obviously heard it. There are other reasons. I think the main reason is the Tonight Show and the show following it, late night television,
right.
is a huge fucking moneymaker for right, these right. people. And you don't want to pull a franchise that's already successful.
That's right.
Yeah. So these are the, but the point was that you were getting kicked publicly
for kind of negating
a friendship, which I thought everybody I could talk to and everybody, but I never heard you.
No.
The animosity didn't go both ways, right? You never.
No. You know what it is? When you're playing football, who do you tackle? The guy with the ball. And that's the way it works. Because, look, you know how show business is. Somebody goes on the Tonight Show and bombs. Oh, man, so sorry to hear about that. Oh, man, good luck. Boy, I really like Larry. He's a great guy, you know? Larry goes on, kills. Oh, he did okay, I guess. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just the nature of...
It didn't bother you the way people were talking?
Oh, of course it bothers me. Well, of course it bothered me, but what are you going to do? You can't do anything about it. You know,
but you had of a platform.
Yeah, I mean, I would hear Stern and all the... First of all, nobody wants somebody to see somebody whine and complain. People who watch show business, oh, there's a happy guy. You don't... Never explain, never complain. Just go... You know, it's like now with the whole... I get asked about cancel culture and all that. I go, if they don't laugh at the joke, they don't think it's funny. I don't care whether it's right or wrong. If they don't laugh at it anymore... You know, I can remember years ago people did black jokes on the Tonight Show and every place else, you know.
At a different time.
Or racist or anti-Semitic or any
But that's not like cancel culture is where they'll tell you now that they won't hire you again because they deemed a joke inappropriate.
Well, that's,
that you did 10 years ago on Twitter.
Well, that's corporate America now. That's not... I don't think this, every corporation, I said, we here at the Acme Foundation do not in any way tolerate sexism or racism under any guise. And then they applaud themselves. And then somebody says something, aha, well, you know, unless that person is big enough or famous enough, and then of course they get a pass. You know?
Right. But that's a different kind of defense. Yeah. I just feel like you deserve,
here's a question.
Okay.
That worked for me. By not whining, by not complaining, you get a whole silent majority of people that go, hey, I like the fact that you just put your nose to the grindstone and did the work and didn't
I could not have done it.
No, how do you not get that, Dad? You are very much like that. You are. No. You say you're not, but you are the most easygoing person that will not.
Yeah. No, but he, and I'm pointing at Jay. Jay.
It's a great thing about radio.
Yeah. Yes. But the vitriol that people were attacking you with, and people that we both know, that constantly attack. I can't tell you how many times I've been in a room and told stories about, and we'll talk about this now for a second. Conan and you.
Right.
Okay. Jay has the number one show on television. And like he said, like in Letterman's days, that block of Jay Leno followed by Conan O'Brien is probably the most lucrative 2 hours of television in existence.
And when that started, Don Omeyer, after 13 weeks, wanted to get rid of Conan. And I said, no, I think he's funny. And I said, tell you what, Don, I will promote Conan every night. At the end of my show, I'll say, stay tuned for Conan. He's got, so Elton John. Whatever.
Yeah, because he had a rough start.
Yeah. So, and that worked fine. And that worked great.
So listen to this.
And
so,
he knew, too.
No, I know the story. I know the inside. I meant NBC, okay? So he's kicking ass. This is the most lucrative, 2 hours of television there is. And ultimately, television is just a factory.
Right.
Okay. Not only is it lucrative, this guy, and I'm pointing again at Jay Leno, has masterminded. I mean, I always found this fascinating. When you did The Tonight Show, not only is it doing well, it's not doing well by accident. You watch the ratings. You know how to book it. You know where the ratings go down. He was the one person that would support me when I had nothing and I was doing hidden Howies. I was doing these hidden camera pieces and he'd put me on. But I would hand in hidden camera things. He would look at it and he goes, I can't. Sometimes this will not play well.
I would say to him, Howie, can we lose the caca doo doo bit?
Yeah.
I mean, that was really what it was. Because I loved Howie, but I could just see from our audience, and I would see from Fred DeCordova, who was kind of snobby, that was not Johnny's. It was still Johnny's sensibility.
Right.
At that point,
Right.
So I would say, and how he did, he would say, okay, I'll take out the doo-doo caca thing. And then it would kill it.
But the point that I'm making is you weren't on a show that was number one. You were on a show that you manipulated to be number one. You worked that show. You weren't just on that show. That was the Jay Leno show.
Right.
So, and NBC and people who watch should be aware of that. That is not by accident. He also supported the show that went after him and the network by promoting and creating that slot after him to be number one. When that came, when Conan's contract came up to fruition, everybody, because that's where they want to make money, CBS, Fox, ABC, is waiting to maybe poach him.
Right.
They go to Conan's people, Gavin Pallone. They go to Gavin and they say, we want to re-up the contract. He goes, well, the only way you can re-up it is we need the Tonight Show. He goes, well, Jay's doing the Tonight Show and it's number one. He goes, I don't care. We need the Tonight Show. They go, well, Jay's got another 5 years on his contract. Right? Incorrect? Jay's got another 5 years on his contract. They go, I don't care. Then we don't know what's happening in 5 years.
Right.
They risk versus reward. They say, well, we're not going to lose this hour to Fox or ABC. Okay, we'll say in 5 years. And then if something happens, maybe in their minds, we'll renegotiate. We'll say you get the Tonight Show in 5 years. They sign that. Gavin says, I want it announced now.
Right.
Right? Am I correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm correct. Yeah. I know I'm correct.
Yeah.
So they call you, one of my friends called you, and said, you have to announce your retirement. You didn't announce a retirement. You don't want to retire. You look at how busy you are now.
Here's my thing. At the time, I know if you don't do that, you die of 1,000 paper cuts.
Why?
Because little stories will drop about you being disruptive or not doing that, So I said, to me, it's like when I would date women. If they don't want to go out with me, I'm not going to beg you. If you don't want to see them anymore, fine. And that's why I said to NBC, You want me out of here in 5 years? Really? Okay, fine. So, okay.
Now, but let's be clear. You don't want to retire.
No, I don't want to retire. But I said, but I know if you, look, when you make the kind of money you make in TV, to the average person, you have no problems at all. And your problems pale in comparison to theirs. So don't even bring them up. So I said, okay, so go the 5 years. See, the real thing that threw this was Craig Ferguson. Because I was number one. Conan was number one. All right, the deal was made. Leno, you're leaving in 5 years. All right. So I said, okay.
Well, slow down. Okay. Slow down. I want to make it really clear. Mm-hmm. You did not retire legitimately. You did not say, you did not announce a legitimate retirement where you said, I've had enough in 5 years.
Well, I think I said, they wanted me to say, I was saying, all right, that's fine. Okay, if that's what they want, that's what they want.
Not what you wanted is my point.
No.
Right. Which I would have a hard time telling the world, this is what I've decided to do. Yeah, you're right about why, but you're amazing to me.
Here's what happens is then the whole machine. Remember, I had no agent. I had no manager.
No, never had.
Okay. So then.
I know your lawyer.
Then
he was
whole
my neighbor.
PR thing starts with the attacks. Ratings start to drop for Leno. You know, whatever they can come up with, they do.
I would have hired an agent or a manager or a publicist.
You know, if I have to convince you to love me, I'm not going to do that. You know, do you like what I'm doing? You know, I never once asked for a raise. They just gave them to me. I said, okay.
That's no, great. I know that. The difference you between, know? Like Letterman used to, he took, Worldwide Pants, which was the production company, and he used to produce, you know, all these other shows that he owned. He owned Raymond.
Yeah,
and He made a fortune. He probably made more from that than he made from the late night show. I came to you a couple times. I said, I got an idea. I want to produce something under Big Dog Productions. Is it Big Dog Productions?
Yeah.
Which you're producing. You go, I just do the Tonight Show and I do my stand-up comedy. You can't know how much I respected you for just, you are who you are and you do what you do.
Well, I mean, that's what it is. See, the thing to this story was, Craig Ferguson came along, and then suddenly he was beating Conan. And the network went, whoa, what's this all about? You know, because his ratings were so good. He won a Peabody Award. He won some Emmys. And then it was like, did we make a mistake? I said, guys, I'm here. And then they came to me and they said, look, the thing with Conan is a done deal, and, you know, next year, whenever.
Well, because I know, my friend, I want to take you through it, like how you thought of this.
Okay.
So not only the.
You just cut him off to take him through how he thought of that?
Yeah. Okay, no, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. I'll let you finish.
No, go ahead. Okay. You talk, and then.
Well, no.
Welcome to my life. My whole childhood, he cut me off to tell me what I was thinking.
Yeah. I don't know where I was going now. Oh. Well, go ahead.
I'm a good interviewer. Yeah,
good.
No, but here's so you announced this retirement against your will. He's going down. I just want people to know everything, and I want to get this out. This is stuff that's been laying on my chest. Apparently, it's not on yours. They realized really quickly that if you announced your retirement, that ABC, CBS, and Fox, you're there for the poaching.
Right.
So right away they say to you, as soon as they realize that, they go, Jay, you can don't go to another network. We're going to make your show, the same show, in prime time.
Right, which I knew wouldn't work. So the deal I made was, if you pay my staff for 2 years, regardless of what happens, I'll do it. Because I think they were keeping me in case Conan didn't work out.
I think they were keeping you because they didn't want you to go other place.
Probably a little bit of both, yeah.
Then management, Gavin Pallone, calls the network and says, all right, so we have the Tonight Show at 11:30. You just gave Jay the 10 p.m. show. I think you're fucking us because... I'll just tell you as myself, if I have something to promote or I want to go on something, I'm going to go on primetime first. You know, there is this war of booking,
right?
Where do you go first? You go to Jay first, right? You go to if you go to Jay, then you can't go to, you know, if you go to Fallon, you can't go to.
Right.
So then he goes, you're fucking us. So now they call you and you've said, I'm keeping my staff, which is, you were always amazing to your staff, and anybody who's worked for you has the same thing to say. You know, you were there for them. You always supported them. And then they say to you, Jay, we said you can do your show at 10 o'clock. No, no, you can't do the same show. You can't have guests. We'll build you a racetrack. Right?
Yeah, well, we could have some guests, but they wanted the monologue at the end of the show to lead into the new. Yeah, it just didn't work.
Right. But just, anything just to keep you there.
Right, right, right.
Okay, so talk about Craig Ferguson.
Anyway, as I said, Craig Ferguson came along, and he was beating Conan. And it was like, I think that we're like, whoa, what's this? And they realized maybe this isn't the best idea. And that's where the 10 o'clock show came from.
Right.
I probably would not have jumped to another network. I'm pretty loyal.
You're the most loyal. That's why you're sitting here today with me.
Well, you know, I sleep well at night. I don't have, you know, I would read all these stories how I came back and demanded $150 million plus I wanted the show back. And the network had to give it to me. Based on what?
I'm going to take you through. This is so cathartic for me. I hope it's doing something for you.
All right, good.
Okay. So then.
Have you been sitting on all these emotions for years?
Oh, you have no idea how many times I've gotten in fights. Yeah. And I've talked to people that we both know and go, what the fuck are you talking about? That's not the way it happened.
I know, but
and why the fuck doesn't Jay defend himself?
You know why? Because nobody cares.
Except for him. He cares.
No, what I mean is, what happens at the end of the day, pull the numbers. Okay, here we are 10 years after it's all over. Okay, the Tonight Show was number one the whole tenure, except for the first 18 months when Letterman had it. And that's the only number that counts.
No, you mean when Conan?
No, no. When Letterman went to CBS, he was beating me.
Oh, yeah, that's on the Tonight Show. Yes.
First 18 months. And then we got it back and never lost it. And we won in every demographic group and all that kind of stuff. And my attitude was Letterman will get the cool kids and the critics, and I'll take the popular vote. And that's pretty much how it worked out well for everybody.
And you engineered that. That's not by accident.
No, that's not by accident.
You engineered that because you could have the cool kids. I talked to you backstage.
Well, the thing
you
was,
have a different sensibility in real life than you do on
network. We did win all the demographic. You know, I would always hear from Letterman, well, Letterman wins the 18 to. No, we didn't. We won that too. We won that. We always did pretty well.
So let me just follow this story because this is my therapy session for you on behalf of you.
All right.
Okay. So then what happens. You're doing your 10 o'clock show in primetime. Conan moves into the Tonight Show. And for all intents and purposes, the Tonight Show is not doing great.
Right. And somehow this is my fault, you know.
So you get a call. And they ask you, before they ask Conan, because you're still on the network, would you be willing to go back and do a half-hour show at 11:35?
Right.
Right?
Right.
Am I correct?
Yeah, with just the monologue and all that stuff.
Just the monologue and maybe one guest. But I said,
run it past Conan.
Before he said yes, he said, run it past Conan. Now, Conan has not been doing well on The Tonight Show. The truth of the matter is, they call Gavin and they say, we'll do the show at 11:35. We want Leno to do it at 11:35 and you go on at 12:05 and you still have The Tonight Show. You can do exactly what you're doing, but now we're giving you the opening act that has worked for the last 20 years, 15 years, whatever it was. It's that hissy fit that I didn't understand. And then the narrative, this is what bothers me about you, Jay. You didn't change the narrative. The narrative was he retired and now he's taking my job. He was still offered The Tonight Show. They wanted to reprogram it back. You said you go first. You were forced to. I don't know what you did wrong. I don't know what could be interpreted as you doing wrong. But there was this all this hoopla, and maybe I live in a bubble where that's not the way people thought. You didn't deserve that negative
hoopla. Well, sounds like it's only because one person was vocal. So therefore.
Yeah. Well, my favorite thing was when they came to me, I said, you know, we've been number one for 14 years. And I'm not going to say which executive said, we want what's above number one. I said, well, I don't know what to tell you. You know, I mean, I just thought that was so funny. And they realized how stupid that sounded. They said what they were looking for was, I don't know, more pizzazz. What, you know, when you do a show like The Tonight Show at 11:30, you can't be outrageous every night.
No.
It's like Sam Kennison, outrageous, hilarious comedy. But if you do it every night, you can't be outrageous every night. So you have to bring it down a step, and you've got to become now, okay, people lying in bed or watching late at night, it's got to be a bit more relaxed. It's got to have a different pacing to it, you know? And the idea was, do you want to be the cool guy and lose the Tonight Show after a few months, or do you want to keep it going? Well, the idea, it's a business. You've been hired to do a job. So you have to act and perform a certain way to do that job.
But that didn't bother you. That didn't bother you. The hoopla of you, the thought or what people were talking about you taking something away from Conan.
Well, I mean, I would hear it all the time on Stern and all that. And
you know, I argued with him about that. You actually called me once after.
Oh,
I argued with him about
that. I always heard it on Stern, too, every time I
But when I was on
once. But I mean, you know, I stole jaywalking from Howard. No, I mean, if anybody stole it, we all stole it from Steve Allen, who did it.
Man on the Street.
Man on the Street stuff, you know. So what do you do? Because the louder you yell, they're going to yell even louder.
But you said you didn't want to say that you were retiring, that you were being forced to retire because of the 1,000 paper cuts. At this point, when they're saying you move back on and you're taking it away from Conan, is that 1,000 paper? Is that 1,000 paper? What can they say? I didn't take it back. Why wouldn't you say they called? I told them to call you. I don't. They're offering me this.
I would be called a liar and be told that wasn't true. You know, if they say it, it's a one-day story. If you then react, you now have a 3 or 4 day story. How many times have you seen this? Someone's accused of something, and they go, no comment. Well, how about no comment?
It's not a one-day story. All these two stories of you and Letterman and you and Conan became books, became TV shows, became mini. That's not a one-day story.
Maybe just
what I mean is, it would just, to the general public, it's just, it's like rich guys throwing silver dollars in the ocean to see who has the most money. It's like, you know, just nobody cares. I was involved in it and I didn't care. Guys, talk yourselves out. Howard, have a good time. Trash me all you want, fine. You know, I used to love it when he would go on Letterman, I'm going to trash Leno tonight. And then I'd check the ratings the next day and we would beat Howard.
You know?
And I was, oh, okay, that was good. I mean, I don't hate Howard. It's what he does, and that's fine. But, you know, I didn't steal John Melendez from Howard.
I know.
John Melendez was doing I'm a Celebrity.
I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
Okay. So he did that whole show. When he left that show, he came to us, and somebody suggested he might be fun to have him. And I said, well, let's see if there's any problem here. Okay, he was making $35,000 a year doing Howard Stern. I paid him $500,000 a year. Who wouldn't take that raise? Who wouldn't take that job? Plus, he had had another whole TV series in between. So he wasn't even on Howard. But, you know, I would hear this thing about, oh, Leno came in and took him. And then all the, you know, and the minions would call you and berate you.
Does Mavis is your wife. How does Mavis, sound like, does she say you have to say something? How is she taking all this?
No, I never brought my problems home, ever.
You don't have to bring them home. You turn on a TV and a radio, your problems are right there.
No, we're not listening to the radio. It never came up. You know, my dad went to the office and came home. I never knew I knew what my dad did, but I never heard about it. And, you know, the best way to stay married is don't bring your problems home. When the door shuts, hey, honey, what's up? We talk about whatever you do, whatever. Not one of those, and then this guy said this, and then they told me, shut up.
You're not working at Sears, buddy.
Huh?
You don't work at Sears.
That's right.
The point is, I can't believe that Mavis doesn't know what went on.
Well, I mean, yeah, she knows.
And she loves you. So did she not, like my wife would.
Mom would. Yeah. Like if you didn't say anything, you would better believe that mom would say something.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you wouldn't want your wife out there saying.
No, she wouldn't. But I'm saying that she wasn't on your back to say, you got to say something, Jay.
No.
No.
No, because look, just say something to who. You've got an audience that's this wide, and you've got this little 10% minority yelling and screaming that reaches a specific audience. And I would read things that were so absurdly not true. It's like QAnon stuff, you know.
Wait, that's not true?
Yeah, exactly. That's my case.
Can I say something here? I just want to say that because I'm a little more distanced from all of this than the two of you. Mm-hmm. You have always been underrated, in my opinion. Nobody really appreciates how good you are at what you do.
Well, that's right, Ken. But isn't that what you want? Isn't that better than being over?
I don't know. I just think that we all have, maybe I have more of one than you, an ego. And
I don't have an ego. I'm a huge believer in low self-esteem. No.
Are you serious?
Low self-esteem is the key to success. I'm dyslexic. When I was a kid, this is a cure for dyslexia. Smarten up. Hey, smarten up. Smarten up. Just get slapped in the face, you know? And my mother always said, you're going to have to work twice as hard as the other kids to get the same thing. Okay. And that's what I did. And when you have low self-esteem, you walk in a room and you don't immediately assume you're the smartest person in the room. When I did The Tonight Show, I said, let me find the best producer, best director I can, and let them do their job. And when they come up to me and say, hey, Jay, that thing you just did, it sucked. Yeah, it really sucked. Thank you. Nobody had to pussyfoot around. Tell Jay it looked fine, but we have to do that. You know, and that's why the show worked, because we could call it exactly as we see it. So the idea that you have some ego, okay, my dear is, if you're any good, somebody will save you.
So my question is, You were saying you didn't want to convince people to love you. It wasn't your job to want you there. But obviously there was millions and millions and millions of people. I'm not talking about the executives going through this, that you didn't have to convince that wanted you there because you were number one. So you wouldn't fight to stay there for those people that were watching you that wanted
to. I was fighting in my own way by the number of letters that I got saying, thank you so much for not getting down in the mud with the other people, blah, 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 blah. We turn you on every night and it's funny and it's lighthearted and you have a good time. And oh, we know you're going through this and we appreciate it. And yeah, I would say those more than outweighed my little petty, oh, somebody said, oh, my ego, I'm so fragile, you know.
But you know, it's not even your ego. First of all, I commend you. First and foremost, listen, I think you're a brilliant comic. I think you're really smart person, but you're just dyslexia aside, that has nothing to do with your intelligence. You're a good person and a nice person, and I think that those are few and far between. And you're loyal to your friends, and you're loyal to your staff, and you're loyal to your wife.
Yeah, and it pays off though. But it pays.
Hey, listen, you got a lot of stuff, and it did pay off. You had a number one show. You got four cars now. Yeah, four.
You know, I wouldn't change anything. And every mistake I made in my life, I'd learned from. You know, there's a story I always tell about why I believe the Cosby women. Because when I was 19, I was a comedian. I was going to clubs in Boston, you know. I went to this one club. I said, I'm a comedian. You're a comedian? Yeah. The guy said to me, how long have you been a comedian? I said, well, about a year. A year. He said, you got to be in the union within 6 months or it's a violation. You know that, don't you? I go, no, I didn't. This was the AGVA union, the stage, you know. I said, no, you got to be it. I can't even talk to you unless you're in the union. This guy getting this whole big thing, you know. So he says, hey, go down and see this guy. So I go down and see the guy at the AGVA office in downtown Boston. It's just like, just an empty office with a chair and a guy in it, you know. And I go in there, how you doing? And the guy goes, he says, are you the guy that I just talked to so-and-so? Yeah, okay. How long have you been a comedian? And I said, well, almost a year. Well, almost a year, that's a violation. I could fine you. And he goes on and on about, you know, the union, you know. I said, well, I'd be glad to join. How much is it? He goes, $300 a year. I said, well, I don't have $300. And he goes, well, how much you got? I said, I got $75. And he takes my $75, right? And he writes on the back of his business card, union man, and signs it. And he goes, give this to the guy when you go back to the club. Now, I knew I was being taken. But much like the girls in the Cosby situation, when he invites them up to the room, you think, is this real? Is this going to be? So I gave the guy the card, and the guy took the card. He laughed in my face, said, no, kid, we don't need you. I'm not looking for comedians. I knew I had been taken for $75. but in a sense, I believe that maybe this was true. So when I would see something like those women with Cosby, people, how could they be so stupid to go up to his room? I go, he's the biggest star on television. He's America's dad. Why would you not, if he saw you and thought you were good and told you so, why would you not believe him, you know?
Right.
And so to me, so that's one of those mistakes that just taught me empathy. It taught me to understand sometimes people do things against their better judgment because they just want to believe so hard and so much that, well, maybe this is the way the grown-ups conduct business. Maybe this is the way show business works, you know? You got to be in this union thing.
Wow.
Well, I mean, I knew I had been taken, but I wouldn't change that experience for anything because, I mean, I remember talking to friends of mine, oh, these Cosby women, they knew what they were doing. They knew that they didn't because I didn't know, you know? I was naive, you know? It's just a matter of being naive.
Howie introduced me to the president of show business once.
Who was that?
I just told him it was the president of show business.
Did he really?
Was, I did. One time we were at the Comedy Store and I said, look, I can't remember who it was, but it was a friend. I just said, you got to meet, we got to make commission. This guy is, no, vice president. This guy is the vice president of show business. And you were so.
I ran over there.
He ran over there and he goes, my name's Lou. I'm going to be on at 8. And then the guy said, will you watch me? I remember you coming back to me and going, Howie, you can't believe it. The vice president of show business is going to watch me tonight.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, that's the perfect case.
Can I just tell this story about you and this also illustrates how great you are. My wife, the very first comedian she ever saw was you. And you went on in Atlanta and you did an hour and a half.
Right.
The next comedian she went to see was Stephen Wright. Now she gets to the Stephen Wright concert and she's waiting in line to go to the bathroom. And then she gets something to drink and she walks into the theater and she sits down and Stephen Wright says, thank you, good night. He only did like 30 minutes. Right. She thought everybody did an hour and a half.
That's funny.
She did, you kind of.
What, Jay, what car did you drive here today?
I drove an Alfa Romeo Giulia. It's not mine. It belongs to Alfa Romeo. They let me borrow for a few months.
To borrow cars?
Yeah.
Well, I'm like a car influencer. I do the car show and all that kind of stuff.
Do you like this car?
It's
you have
nice.
To say.
Yes. 540 horse V6. Yeah, it's powerful. Fast car. I like Alphas. Yeah.
The beauty of working at NBC and seeing him, he was, you know, when I used to do the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, it was always just a Corvette. There was always just a Corvette.
Yeah, he had a Corvette.
He had a Corvette. I don't think Jay drove the same car twice in a year.
I remember when you weren't you doing your show next to his show? And every time I would come visit you, it was so much fun to see what car was parked.
Oh, how many cars do you have?
I got 201 on the road and 168 motorcycles.
201 on the road. What does that mean? They're
registered,
all working?
Registered, you know, stickers and all that.
201 and how many motorcycles?
Many are not registered.
168, yeah.
What is the most valuable car?
Oh, that'd be the F1 McLaren.
Which is worth?
Maybe 20 mil.
Oh my gosh.
What year is that?
It's 1994.
Oh, it's used.
Imagine if you had a newer one.
Why is it worth 20 mil?
They only built 64 and they, you know, I paid $800,000 for it and people thought I was crazy. And then they just went nuts. I mean, one sold last May for 20.
Do you trade your cars?
Million.
Do you ever
sell? No, you don't trade your car. What kind of talk is that?
Well, to sell, like you don't want to make profit.
No, I never sold any. I don't sell cars. I keep them all.
Is the McLaren the one where it opens up?
The seats are in the middle, yeah.
The doors open above the.
Yeah.
So the.
He's a real car enthusiast.
Yeah. Wow. And does it freak? It's amazing because you talk about these humble beginnings in Boston. And now you have like over 200 cars. And do you walk into that garage and go?
I love my garage. But you know, the funny thing is, I meet all my life, I meet people like, hey, you know, Leonard, you're being screwed on that deal. And they tell me how I'm being screwed. And I go, wait a minute, you're living at the Oakwood Apartments. Okay. I have a house in Beverly Hills. I'm not being screwed. I know what I'm doing. You know, I never take my money from my main source of income. I use that to get other money. You know that. You get gigs because you're on America's Got Talent.
You said you never used your Tonight Show money.
No, I never touched a dime on my Tonight Show money.
You only used your stand-up money.
I just live on stand-up money because I like being hungry. If I don't work a week, I really do think I'm broke. I go, oh, man, geez, what did I make this? I didn't make anything this week. All right, just give me the single, Patty. instead of the double and a small Coke, no fries.
Do you still love stand-up? Will you keep doing it?
I love stand-up.
Yeah. I see him at Flappers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I love stand-up because you don't need anybody. You go there. I remember I used to have a bit where I had sunglasses. And I'd take out the sunglasses and do the bit. And one day I forgot the sunglasses. So I said, I'm not doing that bit anymore. I don't have to carry sunglasses. I like the idea of just being, I can do a show. I can do a show at the drop of a hat. I can go. Like this.
But now week, you don't even have the hat.
This week I go to Florida. And I bring one suit, get off the plane.
And six masks.
Tell joke, get check, and I'm out of there.
Yeah. Wow. Is there a car that you want that you haven't been able to get?
No, not really. I'm always happy with whatever I have. Like I said, be happy with what you have. Just make sure you have enough.
But is there, you know, a car enthusiast, there's like a dream. Was there something that doesn't exist anymore and you wish, or you're searching for something?
No, I've got a few of those. I've always been contented with what I have. See, that's the trick. I've never shot for happiness. I only shoot for contentment. Because when you're contented, then you realize, oh, I guess I'm happy. If you're happy every day, it's like drinking champagne every day. Now you're an alcoholic and you just cause, if you're just contented every day.
So you're drunk with contentment.
I'm drunk with contentment. And then I realize within that contentment, I find happiness. I look back and I go, oh, you know, I really am happy. I got no bills, you know, been married 41 years, have a great time. Yeah, I'm fine.
You told me you loved the electric car.
I love my Tesla.
The Plaid. Yeah, the Plaid. Do you like, do you still ride motorcycles a lot?
Yeah.
Are you not worried? You've had a couple of accidents in the past.
Yeah. You know, when you fall down over 70, geez, it hurts. Oh my God.
Have you fallen down recently?
Oh, yeah.
What do you mean,
I went down about a year and a half ago and Jesus, that hurt.
What did you do?
Ow. You know?
What happened?
You know, you're driving a 100-year-old motorcycle with no brakes. What do you think happens? You know? it gets a little tricky. It gets a little dicey.
100-year-old motorcycle with no brakes.
Well,
you're exaggerating.
Minimal brakes, but yeah. In LA traffic, yeah.
You still driving the motorcycle?
I still drive my
motorcycle. He does. The motorcycles you're a little nutty with. The last time I saw you on one of your motorcycles is you have a motorcycle that has a jet.
Oh, the jet engine, yeah.
No, an actual.
That's at a Bell Ranger helicopter, yeah.
But you were at a. You told me a story. You were at a. You offered me a ride, and I said no. But you were at a.
Oh, and I melted the guy's bumper.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
He said a stoplight.
The guy behind me, Nissan Maxima. Now, if you ever stood behind a jet, you know how much heat. It's 1,400 degrees.
A lot of us haven't. Stood behind jets.
I'm sitting there. I like see this guy. He's inching forward. What? And now he's just right up close to me. And this motorcycle has a rear camera. I look at the camera and I see his front bumper going, bloo, you know,
melting.
Just melting from the, just deforming from the heat, you know? And I said, oh, geez, I got to pull away from this guy pretty quick, you know? So
I've never had the opportunity to go to your garage. I've always asked you. I have
you,
a friend
you
here.
You want to be on the car show? I'll put you on the car show.
I would love to be. I don't know that much about cars.
You don't have to fool me. But do you have a dream car? Like, is there a car you'd want to drive?
I'll tell you something.
I feel like Alex.
I rented the Rolls to drive. I'll tell you, I have a friend here who I see him sitting there, Richard Rosenberg, who is much more of a car aficionado. He said, "If there's any time you can get me to Jay's garage, I think I once called you and said, can we come?" And you said,
"Yeah, come over."
And I
come.
But the only I don't get motion sickness. I go on roller coasters. Yeah, I've never. The one time I bought a Ferrari one year, and
a Ferrari.
Yeah,
which one?
I don't even know.
He's
I
just yelling have, it.
The red one, 311.
Richard's yelling it. What is it?
He's doing this.
348.
348.
This is the 348.
That's a 348. Richard's sitting back there.
311.
I don't know. Anyway, I didn't know. Yeah. And he goes, "Well, that's a good car. Can I have a ride? Can I drive it?" And I said, "Yeah." So he took me through the canyon. It's the only time I've ever gotten car sick in my life was Richard driving me in my car. But
do you know he's not allowed to have a
standard
anymore?
Why? Because you could tell how I've interrupted you throughout this.
Can't drive a stick?
I can. I do know how to. But then I lose interest. So what happens is the one time, a couple times, I would be
more than once. This is why you're not allowed.
I would drive home with my wife.
Right.
And then we got home and I'd get out of the car and it was in no particular gear. and or no gear. Right. And then as I entered and opened the door to the house, we would hear a crash and the car would be rolling back out of the driveway across the cul-de-sac into
with
the neighbors.
With
my mom. So she said,
your wife. With my mom in there.
Oh, right. Not my mom. My mom was never in there. I did. That's how much attention I pay. I don't even know who I'm driving.
On a second thought about coming to the garage.
Yeah.
I saw somebody on their way to your show. I think it was Ashton Kutcher on the freeway. My friend was saying he saw him in the new electric crab walk.
He took delivery of that in my garage.
It's like the crab walk.
It's the electric
Hummer. But doesn't it have that? You could turn the wheels.
Yeah, it'll crab walk. It'll walk sideways or go up. Like if you're on rough terrain, it'll help you step.
Did you see the new car that changes colors? I just saw them introduce.
Oh, that's
that.
The BMW at the CES.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, that's a gimmick that's been around for a while. Mustang had that a few years ago. In different light, it looks like to be a different color. Yeah. But.
Do you get calls constantly for people wanting to buy things that you have?
No, I don't sell anything, so nobody calls me for that. No.
Do you work? How much time do you spend working?
I'm there all the time. I work on stuff. You know, when you work with your hands, you appreciate how easy it is to make money talking.
Really?
Well, it does.
You a mechanic?
Well, not really, but I like to dabble.
Worked for Rolls-Royce before you were a stand-up, right?
And Mercedes-Benz and a bunch of others. But when you, I just did new car prep and stuff.
Odometers, I heard.
Odometer recalibrations, we call them.
Well, I call it turning back.
Right. Well, whatever.
Fucking people.
But I always believe the heart is healthiest when the head and the hands work together, if that makes any sense.
That's so why you work used to masturbate.
You work with your hands during the day, and then at night, you talk and you go, boy, this is so much easier than.
I've heard some funny stories about you out in the valley. I heard a story where you gave a ride to somebody wanted to take a ride. It was like a biker guy. I don't know if this is true. A biker guy said, how fast can this car go? And it turned out that the biker was actually a cop.
No, that was at a Cars and Coffee out in the valley. And I brought my McLaren F1, which has three seats and you sit in the middle. And I saw these two gang-looking guys with the teardrop tattoo and all that kind of crap. And I went, oh, these guys are pretty creepy, you know.
You didn't say that to them.
No, I didn't say that to them, obviously. Okay, and one of the guys says to me, hey, did Peter Stevens design this? Now, Peter Stevens is an English designer. And I thought, oh, this guy knows. You know, here I am. Okay, I'm profiling this guy. I'm not being fair. I'm assuming he's one thing. Okay, so I said, oh, yeah, I start talking about the car. And he goes, you guys want to go for a ride? He goes, yeah, we'd love to go for a ride. I said, I get in the middle. These two big gang guys are sitting on each side of me. I'm thinking, well, maybe this wasn't the best thing to do. Goes, go up Canaan, go up Canaan. Okay, so we go up Canaan. He says, let's go through Florida, let's see what it does. So you know those two tunnels?
Yeah.
Canaan. So I go through about $1.20, $1.30. It's like
120 miles an hour through a tunnel.
So I fly through the tunnel, then I hear, whir! I see a cop. Oh, God, I'm going to get stopped. These guys probably have cocaine and meth and fentanyl and everything else in their pockets, you know? So I pull over, and the cop comes over and knocks on the door. And the door goes up. He goes, license registration. And the two guys go, we're undercover police officers. It's okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And they were cops.
Yeah, they were undercover cops. Yeah, yeah.
That's a great story.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know what? I just want to say,
Caroline just sent a picture of her mom's car. Look, do you see that? How cool that is?
That's her mom's car, Caroline, our producer.
I don't know what that is. Chevy?
What is that?
A Chevy? What is that, Caroline?
I can't see it. It looks to be a.
Let me see.
It looks cool. I don't know anything about cars.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a 1954 Chevy.
A 1954.
Chevy. Yeah.
Yeah, it's nothing. Nothing to Jay.
All right, never mind. Well,
no, I like those. I like all kinds of cars.
I tried to
do some kind of engine swap to it, so she has questions about that.
She has questions about it. Well, she should watch his show and this engine swap. I tried to get Jay many years ago to talk my son out of buying motorcycles, which you didn't. He has four motorcycles.
Oh, good for him.
Good for him.
Oh, yeah, great.
Not good for us.
Awesome.
Yeah, I try to burn them and crash
really?
Them. Yeah, I don't like them. I don't like them.
But you said to him, if you get a motorcycle, then I'm going to get a motorcycle. Like, that was your threat to him.
Yeah, that's, how scary.
Well, you don't know how I drive. Anyway, I can't thank you enough for coming by.
Oh,
you
this is a bum's rush, isn't it? Wow.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I saw you looking at your
watch. Oh, no, I always look at my watch.
No, I know.
No, you don't. I'm teasing you. Well, I know it's great fun.
It's been over an hour. Hasn't it been over an hour?
We've been friends for a long time.
And so. I will continue. I would anytime, anything you ever need from me, I would be there for you.
Well, I appreciate that, my friend.
I love you. You've been supportive. And thank you for allowing me. This has been good for me to get it off the chest and go.
Well, yeah,
there's
but no better guy who's more deserving.
But
don't you agree that people who make a lot of money in this business really have no right to complain?
I think that you're absolutely right. That doesn't mean that I would be that. No, but you're a better person than I am.
I mean, I don't think the general public has any interest. You know, for example,
you keep saying that, except they're making movies about your fights.
Here's an example. If you were to say to someone, "Oh, I've been working on this routine. This is the funniest routine ever. I've been working on it for 6 weeks. I'm going to do it tonight." And then you go, "Wasn't that funny for all that work?" But if you see someone like Dean Martin, who didn't really drink, but comes out and appears to be drunk, people love that. That, oh my God, he's funny without even, it looks like he's just walking through it. You know what I'm saying? So the idea is, if it looks like work, it's work. If it looks like fun, it's fun. And if you go up there and you sort of, and you're angry and mad, I can remember, do you remember Skip Stevenson?
Yeah.
Skip Stevenson was a comic.
He passed away. He was on The Real People.
Yeah. And I remember, funny comedian. Okay. Not the best, but funny. But he got a divorce. And he would get up and go, "Anyway, my goddamn wife," you know, and it was like, Jesus. I mean, it really wasn't funny because the anger in his, that's what I mean. You can't, you have to clear your head. You can't be angry. You know, you can't be upset because people don't, they really don't.
But I wasn't talking about
joining. Have you ever had a conversation or seen either Conan or Letterman or anyone recently after all that happened?
Letterman and I are fine. We don't have any problems. He's been very complimentary in articles and things in the last couple of years. And we've always been friends. There's always been a mutual admiration. Conan had some rough feel. I don't quite get it. I mean, I would think that I would have as much right to be angry as he does. I mean, nobody came to me and said this. I just, one day I got the word, "Conan wants you out," you know. What's that all about? Well, he does, you know, and his manager isn't there, blah, 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 blah. You know, the fact that he didn't have lawyers that told him the Tonight Show needs to start at 11:30 always sort of made me laugh. That was, I mean, I had that in my contract, which I wrote myself.
Right.
It starts at 11:30. So when they went to the 12:05 thing, they had no legal recourse because it wasn't in paper at 11:30. So I never got, I mean, I don't have any ill will towards him. I would like to see him and say, I would certainly be friendly to him. But I know he wouldn't talk to me because somehow it's just, here's my thing. If something goes wrong, it's my fault. If you just accept blame for everything, it's a little easier than, well, this guy did.
But even for Conan, I'm not knocking Conan. I'm just saying that this is what he was told. He's told that you're going to, I don't know that he knows that you didn't want to retire. You were forced to make these announcements. I don't think that he was. Do you think he's aware that they called you and said, "Would you go back at 11:30?" And you said, "Call him first." Do you think he knows that?
Oh, I think he knows that. Sure.
You really do.
Well, I assume he did. It was been in the paper.
I don't think he knows. Well, I think maybe that it's been in the paper, but it hasn't.
I think he's a funny guy, and I think he's a decent guy. I don't have any ill will towards him, but it is what you know. What it is? It's show business. Okay, you know, if two heavyweights get in the ring, one is going to walk out and one's going to be on the canvas. Okay. And that's the way, that's just the nature of the business. So you need to, you're either friends or you're not, you know.
Well, Howie's point though, when he says that he felt that you should have defended yourself, that's all show business.
Yeah. Well, again, I shouldn't have to defend myself. If I'm any good.
Well, other
people.
You never have to defend yourself. I'm always here for you, buddy.
I rest my case. No, I know what I'm saying is when you have friends like Howie, you let them speak for it. And that's, no, but it's true. I don't mean that. I don't mean that sarcastically.
Yeah.
But I mean, to me, if I have to go and go, okay. If you have people, like, it's like the end of A Wonderful Life, you know, all the friends show up.
But you want to know something? I know almost everything about you because I'm a fan and been a friend for years. I wanted you to come on. You've done a service for me because I wanted to.
Huh?
I wanted to spew what I knew happened. So you've done me a service personally, but you know, I respect you.
Well, no,
I love you, buddy. And I'm always here for you. And I can't thank you enough. I call you, you show up.
Whatever you need, I'm here. You know.
Yeah. And congratulations on you're doing your second season of
On You Bet Your Life.
On You Bet Your Life. Yeah. That's doing well. You're on your fifth season of Jay's
Seventh season
of Jay's Garage on CNBC.
Yeah.
So watch that. Look at your local listings for You Bet Your Life with your buddy there.
And 15th season of Jay Leno's Garage on YouTube. So that's doing well. So.
That's great. And I would love to be on the show. You don't have to have me because I don't know anything about cars. But
I think it's funny having just someone who knows absolutely nothing about cars.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. I can't even, I'm not even good at identifying that new car smell.
Really?
No. Wow. Nothing. I know. Well, I like.
Your grandson's name is Axel.
There you go. That's his name. Yeah. I know nothing about cars. I know nothing. But anyway, I know a good person when I meet one. Yeah. I met one. You got talent. You're good. Thank you so much for being here. Jay Leno, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah. That was great.